From NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered. I'm Robin Hilton. On this Plus One edition of the program, Weezer frontman Rivers Cuomo.
Met her at a guitar shop on Santa Monica and 7th Street. The salesman tried to get my attention to sell me a Mexican Fender.
Weezer has just released a brand new album called Pacific Daydream. It's the band's third full-length record in as many years, and it's really not like any of the others. So Rivers Cuomo and I sat down to listen to the new record together and talk about how he came to write these new songs, starting with this opening track, Mexican Fender.
That would be insane, my song of love.
This is a song I wrote for the White Album. Somehow we couldn't pull it together, couldn't quite figure it out. I think there were still a few lyric tweaks still to be done. I feel a lot of gratitude to Jake Sinclair, who produced the White Album, and he really pushed me on this song to make it as good as it could be. But now it's on this album, and he doesn't get a credit because we have a different producer. But anyway, he was instrumental in making this song.
You know, I listened to this, and it's a very specific story song.
Yeah.
And when we last talked, I think I made some assumptions about the way you write music that just turned out to be totally wrong, which is I thought you had these very deliberate, specific stories that you had to tell. And it doesn't really work that way for you, right? I mean, you keep all these spreadsheets of lyric snippets and audio snippets, and you're kind of piecing these different elements together to come up with what you think is the best possible song.
There's a range of, on one extreme, you have a song like this one, actually, where it's all about this two or three experiences with this one woman. But, you know, each verse is very literal. This is what happened. This is what went down. And then on the other extreme, there's a song like Feels Like Summer, where every line is taken from a different source and a different experience, and I'm just kind of piecing it together to create a story about something that never actually happened.
Have you always written this way? Like, if you go all the way back to the earliest Weezer records, have you always written this way?
I think I've gotten more into the idea of cutting and pasting. I remember reading when I was first starting out in my early 20s that Kurt Cobain was a big cut and paster, and I was like, but then it's not really about anything, or, you know, how doesn't make sense. It totally worked listening to him, but when I tried to do it, it just seemed like I was pasting together random lines and it didn't add up to anything. But I've definitely evolved in that direction.
She loves me, she loves me, she loves me not.
This is the second cut, Beach Boys.
The sun won't shine tonight. Metro screaming by, walking with the Mexicans. Should I call an ambulance? We need a melody, a gorgeous four-part harmony, so it all makes sense. There's gotta be more than this. Everyone wants to be cooler than everyone else. It's a hip-hop world. About a band I loved when I was a West Side kid. Turn it up, it's the Beach Boys singing out in a sweet voice on a roll like a twist toy. Keep picking them Beach Boys.
I had that title Beach Boys, and I tried a bunch of different melodies to the and chord progressions to that title, and they all sounded a lot like the Beach Boys, and somehow that was just not interesting. So I chose the piece of music that sounded the very least like the Beach Boys and connected it to that title. So this one is about not being on the West Side. It's about being in downtown LA at night and just being totally disoriented and alienated and just kind of reminiscing for West Side life in the early 90s and listening to the Beach Boys.
It Was that something you were feeling at the time or that you've been feeling for a while now?
Yeah, I hear that as the big theme on the record is alienation and loneliness and not feeling like I have a place to fit in. At my core, I grew up in New England, small farm town. I really miss it sometimes. And yet, I recognize as soon as I got out of high school, I moved to LA and it was very exciting. I wanted to be a rock star. And as soon as I moved from Hollywood to Santa Monica, I started writing the Blue Album songs, Sweater Song, Say It Ain't So, My Name is Jonas. All those things just started happening as if by some kind of chemical reaction between me and my East Coastness and the West Side and the beach, Santa Monica. So I'm almost superstitious about it right now. I don't want to leave. I'm very influenced by wherever I go. Like I left Southern California for our second album. I went to Cambridge. I was at Harvard and it was cold and snowy and extremely lonely. And I liked it, but it's just a totally different vibe of music.
Let's hear the end here. Who is that?
That is a reference to Murray Wilson, Brian Wilson's dad. And there's some outtakes from when he was, quote, producing the Beach Boys. And he's, you know, encouraging or berating the amazing Beach Boys as they're singing and asking them to dig a little deeper.
Is that an actual audio clip from that time?
No, it's pretty close, though.
This is Feels Like Summer.
This one's so fun to play live. This album, there's a couple songs, I'm thinking of this one and then also Happy Hour, where the groove of the song is unlike anything I've played before on stage. So I never thought about it, but that makes a big difference on stage when suddenly your body is moving in ways that it's never moved before. And it's a real breath of fresh air for someone who's been performing since 1984.
How do you mean specifically? Like,
I mean, I haven't analyzed it to know exactly what's different about where the kick and snare are going. And I didn't notice it until we started rehearsing. And that's like after we recorded it and it's on the radio. And it's like, then we go to rehearse and really get it down as a live song. And I just start dancing and moving my body in ways that it's never moved before. It's fun.
I have to say, it's not a typical summer song. It's kind of sad.
Well, you know, we set out to make the Black album to follow up the White album, and
that's what this is going to be. Pacific Daydream is going to be the Black album.
And then it kind of morphed into another beachy album, but it's like beach mixed with black, and it's definitely got a darker, sadder undertone to it relative to the White album.
See you. And this is true, I think, with a lot of the songs on this record. This one's Happy Hour. It feels like the end of summer. It doesn't really feel like summer. It feels like everything's over.
Yeah.
A little melodic reference here. Tell me if I'm wrong. That little bit to me, I was like, is that a tisket, a tasket? I lost my yellow basket.
That melody has been handed down for a long time in many different cultures, now that you mention it.
So, you know, you make a reference to Monty Python at one point in this song, and I there's often so much humor in your music, and I sometimes don't know how to take it. You know, like if I'm supposed to take it seriously or not, sometimes I feel like you're sort of winking at the audience a little bit.
I am completely oblivious and confused, and I have no idea. I can tell you what I was thinking and feeling when I wrote it. I never intend to be ironic. It's more like I knew the chorus was going to be, I need a happy hour. So the verse has to describe like this really down setting. So in this case, I was writing stream of consciousness or free association, where the first image that comes to your head, that's what you have to write. So like what is the ultimate buzzkill? And the first thing I thought of was the 20 ton weight falling on somebody and crushing them.
In Monty Python.
Yeah. And that seemed perfectly reasonable to me. And then, of course, when any other human hears it, they're like, you can't sing about Monty Python in a pop rock song.
Right.
He must be ironic.
Right. Or I think of the song like Thank God for Girls on the last record, about taking the rib and putting it on the popcorn, setting in the microwave. And
that's another example of free association. So maybe when I use that technique, it hits people as ironic.
This is Weekend Woman.
Weekend Woman.
Yeah. You mentioned before how you were sort of in music scientist mode, trying to understand why some of your favorite songs by other artists work as well as they do. Are you still doing that? And is it still informing what you're doing?
I think I wouldn't say I'm studying a particular artist at the moment. It's more like a playlist. Recently, I've been studying today's top hits on Spotify, which is their biggest playlist.
Right.
And then like 15 million people around the world listen to that.
Yeah.
Or at least subscribe to it. And yeah, I'm checking in on that a couple times a week and just looking at like, okay, how much lyrical repetition is in the chorus? Is the first note of the chorus higher than the highest note in the verse? You know, those kinds of technical questions. Not that I'm necessarily copying what they do, but sometimes it'll remind me like, oh yeah, I don't have to follow this old rule in my head. Look, everyone else is breaking it.
Was this your part?
Well, this Week in Woman, it's another relationship song, but, you know, as you know, not necessarily about you or anyone specific, perhaps, but, or is it?
No, this one is not.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm wondering is, did you decide at some point that a relationship was part of the equation? You know, like...
Well, let me take that back a little bit. It's like, the lines are from different sources, and a lot of which are from real relationships, and some of them involve a woman, some of them maybe are involved, could be anything, I guess, an animal, a higher power, or a man, who knows,
yeah.
What I was writing about. But I took them from all these different places and connected them in a way that it sounds like a more traditional song, boy-girl song.
Yeah.
That actually doesn't use the word girl anywhere. In fact, the word girl doesn't occur once on the entire album.
Interesting.
All of my conversations die a painful death, you see.
This is QB Blitz.
I can't get anyone to do algebra with me.
I was trying to get my wife to do Khan Academy Algebra 1 with me. She is not having it.
Just for yourself?
Yeah, I got interested in algebra.
Just recently?
No, this was like 2 years ago, and I did it for 6 months. I think I made it 70% of the way through the ninth grade algebra. And then that kind of morphed into coding, and I've been taking Harvard CS50, the Intro to Computer Science class, ever since. I'm on week 8.
You don't find just working on music full-time just takes up everything, and you're a dad too. How do you have the time for something like that?
I don't put a lot of time into it, maybe on average a half an hour a day, but it adds up.
You don't strike me as someone who wastes time.
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't sound like fun.
You ever just plant yourself in front of the TV and say, forget it, that's all I'm doing tonight, I'm just going to watch?
No, I don't. I've never gotten into TV. I want to watch Vietnam, but that'll be streaming.
Yeah.
On my laptop.
Yeah.
You know, apart from Mexican Fender, there's not like a lot of power chords on this one. Was that an intentional direction?
Yeah, I mean, that's been my goal for many albums, and I think we finally achieved it on this album, thanks in large part to the producer Butch Walker, who's our age, he's our generation, he's a real rock guy, but he didn't grow up on Weezer, he's not enamored of the OG Weezer sound, he's very knowledgeable about the history of rock guitar, and he has all these great guitars and amps, and it's like I'd hand him a pretty typical Weezer sounding song like this one, and he was just able to help me reimagine it. We listened to a lot of Phil Spector and Clash, and you know, it's the same kind of song, but just a whole new sound for us. It's really fun.
This is Sweet Mary. Sweet Mary.
Make it through. Ghosts come out at night time.
find you get by setting rules for yourself when you go into a project?
It forces you to be creative and come up with new solutions. What I said about there's the word girl doesn't exist on this album, and I just became aware that that's kind of a go-to thing. Well, not just for me, but for pop rock guys since the beginning of time. It's like that's just your go-to word, and it's like, all right, so what happens if I'm not allowed to sing that word? There's this rule I've imposed upon myself. So then it comes to that point in the song where you're about to say it, and it's like, oh, I got to think of something else. And like in Happy Hour, I say, maybe I'll meet not a pretty girl, but a scientist. Okay, well, that's a little more interesting.
Yeah. It also forces different rhyme schemes, which then steer the lyrics in also a whole other direction then.
Yeah.
I want to show my
this Sweet Mary, I wondered if this was a reference to the Virgin Mary, because you talk about her coming to you in a time of need.
Yeah, I mean, I have this weird Catholic side, which is weird, because I'm not Catholic, I'm never Catholic. But I hear it in Thank God for Girls, too.
The single cover had the Pope on it, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm half Italian, so I have that. Yeah, that's probably it. Like my grandparents are from Italy, and I didn't grow up around them, but it's just kind of in my history, in my unconscious. It's just kind of romanticize Italian culture, Catholicism. And
well, it's a religion is probably informed more literature and music than anything else on the planet throughout history.
Yeah.
This is Get Right.
I've been spending time alone, thinking about the things it could have been. It's harder on my own. I didn't think it would turn out like this. I made a shot with pictures of you.
One of my favorite accomplishments on this album is the bass tone. Scott is the greatest bass player in the world and always had amazing tones, but this time he used Butch's Mustang bass, which is like this tiny little bass with a kind of plucky tone to it with reverb, and it's just really fun. It's a much more melodic instrument.
Gives it a lot of presence too.
Yeah.
Does he use a pick?
He usually doesn't, but I wonder, I think he may have on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
So there are a handful of songs on this record with multiple songwriting credits, and this is one of them. It lists Johnny Coffer, Johnny McDade, and Josh Alexander.
Johnny Coffer is one of my favorite guys to work with. Actually, he's in England, so we just kind of send each other files back and forth. I met him after our show last year at Brixton in London. And he's a young guy. He grew up on Weezer, but he's like completely evolved into this 21st century producer guy that I barely recognize what he does. Like, I can't even explain it. It just bears no resemblance to like sitting down with a guitar and writing a song.
Right.
But he's a really good compliment for what I do. And Josh Alexander is my friend on the West Side. He's a great pianist and
he's worked with like Demi Lovato before, right?
Yeah. And I've worked with him for years. Like he's just a great melody guy and great pianist. So then Josh came over to my house. I wasn't happy with the melody I had for the verse, so Josh helped me whip it into shape.
This is La Mancha Screwjob.
Yeah.
What all are we hearing there?
I think that's my voice that Butch kind of manipulated in Pro Tools. This song is actually written for our 9th album, Everything Will Be Alright in the End.
So when you pull a song like that from your archive of material you haven't used, how much reinventing goes on with a track like that after you pull it into the present?
Sometimes it's like totally rewrite all the lyrics. That's pretty common because the first draft was cheesy as hell. But in like this case, it was pretty much nothing changed in the song. I wrote a bridge for it, and the production's totally different. It sounds way cooler. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it didn't fit on the album we were making at the time. And then it's cool because you're listening back to old stuff and you're like, holy cow, this is a great song. Why didn't we put this out? I love the bridges on this album.
What is it that you love? Why do you think they work so well?
Because they're choruses.
How to explain that for someone who doesn't know the difference between the two?
Well, a chorus is usually the part everyone looks forward to. It's the big sing-along part. It feels like you've arrived home, and it sums up the point of the song. And I always usually start writing I start with the chorus, even though it's not the first thing you hear in the song. And so I'll write a bunch of choruses, and some of them are really great, but they're not quite enough to build a song around. So I just set them aside, and then I use them for bridges. So, and a bridge traditionally is more of like, it's like a departure, and you go off and you explore some more challenging music, and it feels like you're stepping away and things are getting tense, and then you return to a chorus. And those are great too, but I don't know, recently I like sticking a chorus in there instead.
This is the last track, Any Friend of Diane's.
Yeah.
Any friend of Diane's is a friend of mine. Any friend of Diane's is a friend of mine. Any friend of Diane's is a friend of mine. Broken at Papa John's, I was making good bread. Got a $20 tip on New Year's, and I moved out to LA. With a fountain pen, she took me to her monster with the boys from round the way.
Did
Did you have somebody in mind when you were writing this?
You know, I think I was kind of shifting around between different women I knew when before making it. And it's just like just thinking back on women who were very helpful, supportive, and like there's this, my boss at Domino's Pizza, she painted my band's logo on the back of my jean jacket. You know, that meant a lot and gave me a feeling of confidence. With black hair and this mis-shirt, me is murder. I asked her if she had a boyfriend, she said no. I asked her if she had a girlfriend, she said hell, I would know.
What is it that you, when you're both playing music or when you know people are listening to music, what is it that you want from music most, and what do you want people to get out of your music the most?
Probably incredibly pleasurable feeling of catharsis, and a feeling that they're not alone and they're understood and somebody gets it, and yeah, they're part of this community of people that are feeling the same thing.
You said that as you approach the release of a new record, you get really, really excited and you're feeling great, and then when it finally comes out, you ultimately feel dejected. How are you feeling this go around?
I feel pretty good. Like, I think the press is gonna dig this one more than usual, so I don't think we're gonna take the usual beating. I mean, I guess I'm at the confident stage, huh?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, but you said you feel confident before the record comes out.
Yeah, well, talk to me in a couple weeks.
That's Rivers Cuomo of the band Weezer. He joined us from the NPR studios in Los Angeles. I'm Robin Hilton here in Washington, D.C. For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered. I still